Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Pa Roblin.
Ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay, here we go.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Calderney. This is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined as usual by
Vincent Calderney.
And this week, we're going to talk about something kind of cool, actually. We're going to talk about the Loup-Garou. Also known as werewolves. We've actually got a real werewolf story for you. A real one.
Oh, yeah. Before we get going, I just got to tell you, Joe, I just got to tell the audience.
Yeah.
And this is it's a bit of a confession. And I hope people aren't too judgmental of me or whatever, because it's maybe a little bit embarrassing. But
yeah,
I'm just going to come out and say it. I'm a werewolf super stan.
Uh-huh.
I'm into werewolves. If you got a werewolf story that you want us to cover, send it over and I'll probably do it, because I love me a friggin' old-fashioned werewolf.
Yeah, no, they are quite cool. And who knows, because I mean people were tried and convicted of lycanthropy, back in mm-hmm. late medieval times, and mm-hmm. they would have done that if there hadn't been good reason, right? Like the guy that we're going to talk about this week. I mean, yeah.
I said I'm a werewolf super fan. I did not say I was a believer in werewolves.
Okay,
just so fine. We're clear about that.
Yeah. Well, just to be, the werewolf legend really started in Central Europe back about the late 15th century. And, there's a reason it caught on so big and spread across Europe and to other parts of the world, too. And that is Europe back in those days, was mostly forested, and there really were wolves out there. And there really were scary, freaking human beings out there lurking in the woods, too.
So right, it's not hard to believe
that, your peasants, your average peasants living in their little villages out there started believing in werewolves. I kind of get it.
I don't want to get too deep, because I really could take up a whole podcast talking about this crap, but I'm gonna edit myself down a little bit.
Yeah,
there is, especially if you're into like Carl Jung, there is a tenuous and stressful relationship with humans, right? This idea that we're animals, Yeah. Right. But how much are we animals? Where does a line between a human and something like a wolf begin and end?
Mm-hmm.
How in control of our baser evolutionary instincts are we?
Mm-hmm.
How, yeah. You know, I feel that very much when you look at myths about werewolves, about skinwalkers or Wendigo, or for that matter, I think even vampirism.
Yeah, no, I do. I think, yeah, speaking of the Wendigo, by the way, I was going to talk a little bit about the Wendigo because this has some application to this story and other stories.
I think there's big connections to skinwalker lore in this story too.
Yeah, no, there are. It's a similar phenomenon, but for reasons we'll find out about, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a reason people became werewolves. It might be similar mm-hmm. to the reason that people were, taken over by the Wendigo.
Sure.
We'll talk about
that.
We'll
talk more about that. Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it here. Well, where, you know, lycanthropy, which is werewolfism, I guess you would call it, as I said, did arise. It actually began in Switzerland, or at least the place that you would call Switzerland today, in the early 15th century. And belief in it rose kind of in parallel with witchcraft at the same time.
Hmm.
So either werewolves first showed up at this time, or at least people started believing that there were werewolves around this time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think my guess would be, and don't hold me to this, Joe, but my guess would be that, like witchcraft, there was a period in European history where, because of the court system, we needed to have a fundamental name for these phenomena that probably to some degree had always been with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, going back to, you know, before the dawn of society, right? Like before there were, I think there were always the idea of animalistic humans and people who could conjure and do acts of sorcery. We just, the names for these things come out of panics in the Middle Ages where we had to point a finger and say, that's exactly what that thing is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were long before this, there were beliefs in ritual magic and sorcery and stuff like that. And, you know, as well.
And it's cool.
Yeah. The rise of Christianity in Europe sort of threw an extra twist into the whole thing, because these things were not only kind of scary, but they were seen as heretical and blasphemous as well. Oh,
absolutely.
So it's bad enough if you're a werewolf and you're killing people, but
right,
it's even worse now because you're desecrating God's realm.
I think there's also something, you know, so much of Western religion, and I don't think for ill, I just want to be really clear, I don't have an issue with this, is about transcending your animal nature.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Doing good things, being a good person, despite the kind of natural pull to behave in ways that are selfish or self-serving, immoral, whatever, and do something better. That's what the Bible is about. Not to get all religious on you guys, but that's what Christ preaches. When you are a werewolf, it's a horror story because it superpowers, it supercharges that animal nature and makes you into something that is really like specifically ungodly, because you can't deny that nature in yourself. That's scary. That's frightening.
Yeah, it kind of is. And of course, you know, of course, the way they saw it back in those days, I mean, was that people were more doing it on purpose. Like if you watch like a werewolf movie, say today, it's more of a curse. Mm-hmm. It's inflicted you without you actually wanting it to happen.
Right. Well, this is where I think that this story of lycanthropy and other ones like it have more in common with skinwalker lore.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're the exact same, but than with the modern post 19th century version of lycanthropy as curse or disease.
Yeah. Yeah. In this case, it's not so much a curse. It's like back in those days, they saw it as something you deliberately did. Like you decided to dabble in the dark magic, jerk. You know, look where you ended up. Right. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But anyway, these legends of werewolves have spread across Europe, and of course, a lot of trials and executions followed. And the executions were rather nasty. And it wasn't typically a werewolf wasn't just, you know, hung or beheaded. Nothing quite that easy. No,
no, these executions were pretty damn horrific.
Well, let's talk about our real werewolf that got busted for this practice. You want to talk about this guy?
Yeah. So one guy who got caught practicing lycanthropy was named, and I'm struggling with this, but I'm going to do my best, Gil Gagné.
Is it Gil or Giez? Let's go with Gil.
Let's call him Gil. Let's just call him good old Gil.
Let's call him Gil. Spelled G.
I suck at French.
Me too. But his name is spelled G-I-L-L-E-S. So Gil is, but we'll call him Gil. Mm-hmm. And it was probably pronounced Gia or Giez. I don't know. Gia. I have no idea.
I even looked it up, but it's a hard sound to make with your mouth if you're an English speaker.
Yeah.
Anyway. So this little town called Dole.
Actually, I do know how that's pronounced. That's pronounced Dahl.
Dahl?
Yeah. Oh,
okay. It's spelled, I looked Dole, that one up too.
D-O-L-E, Dole. But it's pronounced Dahl.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's true. That's kind of, it's that French. Oh God, I'm so bad at this. Whatever. So, Dahl was a small town in southeastern France, about 45 miles from the Swiss border.
Yeah, and I should say, very close to the original home of werewolfism. Hey,
we're also not a million miles away from one of my favorite stories we've ever covered, which is the Beast of Gévaudan.
Exactly. Which, yeah.
By all means, go back and check that one out because I think it's one of my favorite stories we've ever done. But yeah, so we're in that kind of that same area. We're definitely well before that story takes place. And I should also say that Dahl is not an is a was, because it's not there anymore.
No, it is there.
It is? Oh.
It is. It's still there.
Let's leave that in for my shame. I didn't look it up. I just trusted your script, which then I proceeded to misread. So Dahl is still there. I thought it was, actually. I thought I'd seen it on a map when I was looking up something.
Yeah.
So, yes, Dahl is still there. My apologies to the people of Dahl. You really exist.
Our many listeners there. Yeah.
the millions of Shocking Details fans who live there are going to riot on Twitter at me, and I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is still there, but it's grown a bit.
Yeah, and it has. It's a small city now. I think it's got a cathedral, so that makes it a city, right?
I mean, to me, it does.
Yeah, it's about 25,000 people, I think.
Wow. Okay, cool. Oh, wow, yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
It's noteworthy as the birthplace of Louis Pasteur, who you may have heard of. He invented El Pastor tacos.
Yeah, I did a little street viewing of the town of Dole, and it's actually quite nice. It's very medieval looking. A lot of old stone buildings and narrow little lanes. But it's medieval looking without the feces and the gutters and the guy in the horse cart with corpses piled in it, walking down the street yelling, "Bring out your dead!" Yeah, it's not like that at all. But
I'm probably going to cut this, Joe. But one of the things I always think whenever I'm watching some kind of bodice ripper show, Bridgerton or something like that, is I work around some pretty gnarly stuff like homeless camps.
Yeah.
It's that's probably what everything smelled like. BO and burning trash and feces in a gutter eaten by rats. That's probably what the entire world smelled like. It makes it so much less sexy.
Yeah. People in medieval Europe actually were cleaner than we give them credit for. But still, the fact that the lack of, municipal sewage systems probably did smell things up just a little.
I did not look at the city of Dole on Dahl on Street View, but I do know that area of France, and it's really cool down there.
No, it is a nice area, and I highly recommend going out and having a look at the city, because it is a beautiful place. But of course, in 1572, this is when our story takes place, it was obviously quite a bit smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Probably under 1,000 people.
Okay. This is a little place.
But our protagonist, Monsieur Gil Gagné, was living in the woods outside of town. Which is typical of witches and werewolves, right? They always live off in the woods and isolate themselves from humanity, right?
Or maybe witches and werewolves always turned out to live apart from everyone else, because it was usually some kind of oddball who was kind of isolated and then got fingered by the mob when a witch hunt was on. That's for you to decide.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, so maybe the stereotype is kind of working in reverse here, right?
Right. I mean, that's a human instinct. We talk about base human instincts.
Yeah.
Stuff is going wrong in our village. Let's blame the outcast.
Yeah, exactly. That creep. Yeah, the creepy guy who lives out there in a cabin in the woods, Yeah.
Yeah. But in fact, it probably has nothing to do with any of that. I mean, certainly you know, talk about witches, like the Salem witch trials and stuff. Like they were just terrible farmers in a place they didn't know how to farm. And
yeah.
And a bunch of ladies got blamed for that.
Yeah. Well, you got to blame somebody. So, hey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, so Garnier was living outside of town and he's subsisting off the land. Sounds like he was pretty old school and kind of a hermit. Yeah. Living the sort of hunter-gatherer existence.
Yeah.
And he rarely went into town. And despite his kind of unsociable personality, he somehow managed to find himself a wife.
I guess there's someone for everyone, right?
Hey, man, it's just math, right? Mm. Someone for almost everyone.
Yeah.
Sorry, single ladies.
Yeah.
But he did. Yeah, he did manage to find a wife. And as you wrote, they're living in wedded bliss in his little hovel in the woods. So they were happy together.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know what their home life was like. Yeah.
Well, I wasn't sure if that was a joke you were writing or if they actually had a good marriage.
Yeah. So, yeah, life was grand, except that Gil was starting to have a hard time feeding himself and his wife. And I don't know if this was because he was getting older and slower, or maybe the forest he was living in was getting overhunted, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the game migrated out of the area. You know, animals do that. They have their own reasons, their own habits. It could be because it could be maybe that the citizens of Dahl were polluting the streams in the area and the critters were moving further away to find cleaner sources of water. I mean, I don't know. But the upshot was that Gil and his wife had fallen on hard times.
But salvation came in the form of a demon.
Ooh.
Well, or some kind of supernatural being.
Yeah, I've seen this described as a phantom or, you know, or something, or a demon or whatever, you know.
Right, right. Yeah. So one night, the Garnier family was visited by this demon, and he gave him an unguent.
It's actually, I think it's pronounced unguent.
Unguent?
Unguent.
Yeah. So Garnier was visited by a demon who gave him an unguent.
And what is an unguent?
What's an unguent?
It's an ointment. Yeah. Ah. I like unguent because it sounds more medieval.
Yeah, because we couldn't have just said ointment and then I just would have known, not only known what you were talking about, but then also been able to pronounce it.
Well, the thing about ointments, though, is that when I think ointment, I think something that comes in like a toothpaste tube, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You know? And I want people
to... could have said a balm or a salve.
Yeah, I want people to think of like an unguent as something that is in a clay jar and it's kind of greasy and smelly and disgusting smelling and everything.
No, I like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, especially because like unguent sounds almost like the word unctuous, right?
Yeah.
Like I'd imagine having a smell like fermented onions or something.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, God knows.
Might have smelled great, but I'm just not picturing it smelling like Bengay.
No, but I assume it smelled worse. But it was a magic ointment that would help Gil with his hunting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now the demon told him that if he smeared this greasy concoction on himself, that he would be transformed and he would have the hunting prowess of a wolf.
Dope.
Right.
Now, of course, you'd think that this was most likely a dream, but the ointment was still there when Garnier woke up.
Apparently it was. Yeah.
I mean, that's what he said anyway.
That's what he said at his confession. Yeah.
Yeah. So he figured, you know, might as well give it a whirl, right?
I mean, right. Yeah. So all this came out in the trial, right?
This is all part of Garnier's confession, which is just fascinating. You can actually get it on the internet. I haven't been able to get my way through the whole thing, but it's there. It's translated. You can read it in English. You can download a PDF and check it out because it's been preserved.
Yeah.
So this is not exactly classic like canthropy, but it's certainly got some stuff in common with it.
Yeah.
But what's not clear is that the prosecution ever asked to actually see this ointment.
He said
he had it.
Yeah. I guess I was going to talk about that a little bit later too, because that is an unanswered question in this whole story. How deep into the details did they go with this? But anyway,
I would have really loved it, even though I know it wouldn't be around today, if they would have got their hands on it and just taken a look, been like, "What is this stuff?"
It would have been best if it had been preserved and it's in some museum somewhere today and we could go in there and
we could do some tests on it.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Great.
Yeah, it really would be cool. But long story short is he's got this stuff that the demon or somebody gave him and he starts putting it on himself. And then, the children of Dahl start to disappear. And the number of dead and or missing kids kind of varies in this story. The generally accepted number is 4. which is the number of murders that he confessed to. I've seen accounts that claim 6, and I suppose it's possible that they're only counting the kids whose mangled corpses turned up. And because kids were disappearing, it might be that there were more victims. I don't know.
Right. Well, it's also one of those things like where you know, if there's a werewolf in town and some kids go missing,
yeah,
probably authorities are not going to be super curious. They're going to be like, it must have been the werewolf, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's just part of the cost of doing business, you know, kids are going to disappear.
Well, no, I guess what I'm saying is like, if a kid fell down a well or got lost in the forest or was predated by some other psycho,
yeah,
it seems like they just rush in and be like, probably was the werewolf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a werewolf, and just don't let your kids go wander alone in the woods, huh, kids? You know, there. But where were we? Let's see. So people actually began to report sightings of a large wolf-like creature in the forest. Mm-hmm. And this, of course, might be just the power of suggestion at work. You know, kids are disappearing, so there must be a werewolf around, right? So everybody's primed to see a werewolf. I was going to say there could also have been something out there. I mean, that there actually could have been a beast of Gavudan lurking out there.
Or just a really big wolf.
Yeah.
Surprisingly populous around this time in the south of France.
Yeah.
They were really doing well. I don't know how well they were doing around this particular town,
mm-hmm.
but in the area, say around Gavudan, in yeah. this time period, wolves would have been very successful apex predators who were a legitimate threat to humans and livestock.
So they
might have been actually seeing a wolf. And then for one reason or the other, because of hysteria, been like, that wolf I saw was a really big wolf, therefore was a magic man wolf thing.
Mm, yeah, could have been that. Or it could have been that some dude with antlers on his head. So what they were really seeing was the Wendigo. I don't know. Always possible. Yeah. But we'll get back to our Wendigo talk here. Let's see. So. Oh, you want to take the next one? First documented victim?
Garnier's first documented victim was a 10-year-old girl killed in October of 1572, and she'd been strangled, and her body was mutilated with some big chunks removed. It's pretty gruesome.
Yeah, removed in the sense, as far as I know, by teeth. It didn't look like something they'd been surgically removed with a knife or anything.
Yeah, so yeah. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
So this would seem like, you know, animal predation. Except for the strangulation part, right?
Yeah.
You're going to need thumbs, opposable thumbs to strangle somebody more or less.
Well, maybe they didn't notice. I mean, maybe they didn't notice the strangulation part at first. I don't know.
I guess what I was maybe wondering, we can talk about this in theories, but was that if the person had been strangled and then predated postmortem. But to the people of Dahl, this was seen as, you know, probably just a wolf. But after subsequent attacks, it would become apparent that this was obviously the werewolf at work.
Yeah, probably. What else could it be? So not long after this first killing, Garnier attacked another little girl, and he was hard at work tearing into her flesh with his teeth. Must have been hungry. But okay, he did say that the ointment made him just like ravenously hungry and just uncontrollably vicious. But anyway, so he's actually ripping at her flesh with his teeth. She's not even dead yet. And some villagers happened by and heard the commotion. So he beat feet out of there. And nobody got a good look at him at this time. And in fact, the villagers that were all convinced that what they had seen, or at least heard and kind of seen a little bit of, was actually a wolf attack.
I mean, that's reasonable, right? I remember we're talking about how many wolves there were around.
And you find this girl as she's all torn up with, you know, bite marks and stuff in her and stuff, you know. So, yeah, it obviously must have been some sort of wild animal. The wolf would be top of the list for suspects.
In this region, in this time, makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I don't know how much of a, it appears from the tellings that they actually sort of saw him, at least sort of kind of saw him like attacking and running away and stuff. And yet still managed to convince themselves that it was a wolf.
Mm.
But, you know, this could be the power of suggestion at work. I mean, or it could be, too, that being a hermit, Unabomber kind of guy living out in the woods in a little cabin, maybe he wore animal skins for clothing, you know. And so maybe that's another reason why they thought they had seen a wolf attack.
I want to follow up on that specific idea in theories.
Let's talk about that. Yeah.
We'll come back to that.
But as for another factor at work here is that probably these villagers couldn't quite bring themselves to believe that a human being would do something like this.
That's pretty brutal.
But as for this little girl, she was still alive. She was taken back to town, but she died of her wounds later, unfortunately, before she could give a witness statement and implicate Gil.
Yeah. Sounds like she was hurt pretty bad. That's really sad.
Yeah.
So in November of 1572, Garnier killed a little boy and devoured parts of his corpse on the spot.
Nice.
Plus, he also tore off the boy's leg to save for later.
Mm.
In at least one account, he took the leg home to share with his wife.
Yeah. Well,
just out of curiosity, Joe, is this his confession? Is this drawn from his confession, or is this just what he's accused of?
The leg was obviously gone, and he confessed to taking the leg and then to eat later. And so, you know, so that was part of the confession. But as far as like exactly how he shared it with his wife, if he did, that's an open question. Because, you know, was she aware of what was happening?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about. I mean, that's where this really, for some reason, I don't know, somebody's out there, he's a psycho killer, doing psycho killer stuff. I'm not saying I can live with that, but like, it sort of makes sense. We think of serial killers as loners.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think of someone who does horrific stuff like this and has an accomplice, has a friend, has someone who is willing to share in the cannibalism with him, woof, that just makes it, to me, that just elevates it so much. It gets so much scarier to me.
Yeah. And here's the thing too, though, is that like, I don't know how desperately starving these people were that winter. Maybe she was, you know, she was an accomplice because she was just that damn hungry. When people are that hungry, they'll do all kinds of stuff. And, Or, you know, maybe she wasn't aware. I don't know. I mean, if, you know, it is possible he came home that night with what was obviously a kid's leg and tells her, "Hey, meat's on the menu, honey." You know, maybe he butchered it out of her sight and just presented her with some cuts of meat and said, "Hey, I killed a rabbit," you know, or something. I don't know.
No, that's a good point. She didn't necessarily, I guess is my mind goes to him walking through the door and pulling a child's leg out from under his cloak, like, check it out. And she was like, "Oh, good. I'm really ready to eat. I'm famished."
Or it could be another alternative scenario. He pulls it out and drops it on the table. She's horrified, but then he says, "Hey, look, honey, it's this or starvation. What's it going to be?" You know?
No, it's true. There's all kinds of that's kind of what's frustrating about these cases, and especially a lot of these older cases, is we don't really know how this went down.
Yeah.
Because there's no testimony that I've found, and I've done less than an hour of research on this, unlike you.
Oh, but I'm supposed to admit that. You extensively researched it.
No, when it's your week, you send these scripts to me kind of late, and I don't have that much time to go through and into them.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I mean, I trust you, but I didn't see anywhere where there was any testimony where they talked to her. And this is something that really frustrates me about some of these older cases. And when I say older, I mean like even in the case of Christiana Edmonds, we covered way back at the beginning of the show.
Oh, yeah, the poisoner.
Yeah, exactly. Where no one really gets the woman's side of the story because of, I mean, I guess sexism. I don't know. But like, if you were interested in this werewolf man, wouldn't you want to talk to his wife and be like, what the hell was this guy like?
Mm-hmm.
And no one did that I'm aware of anyway, that no one wrote it down.
They might've actually done it. They might've actually written it down, but nobody bothered preserved those records because they just didn't find it interesting. I don't know. There is very little mention of his wife in all the accounts of this.
She's a really fascinating remote figure that I would love to know more about. Mm-hmm. I would love to know her perspective on this man.
Yeah, no, I would too. Yeah. And what happened to her? I don't know. I assume that she was executed along with him.
That's true. I have no idea. Yeah, I was hoping you knew what became of her. Did she live through this? Was she killed?
I don't know.
She's a cannibal. They probably didn't like that. Anyway, we'll get to that.
I assume that she was executed. That was very typical in these cases. If somebody's caught practicing witchcraft or whatever, usually they're, you know, well, family members quite often got the chop too. You know what I mean?
Well,
yeah.
I mean, it seems like, you know, like you said, there's a chance she had no idea. But I would have to imagine that French Catholic legal officials in the late 1500s would have had very little patience for someone who admitted to engaging in cannibalism, even if she said she didn't know.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And
they'd probably really look down on that.
I think the not just church authorities, but the local villagers at the very least, if she had been, say, found found guiltless and just like, oh, I still think that the locals would have shunned her completely.
Well, I mean, that would have been, I mean, if you think about it, Joe, I mean, that's the best case scenario.
Yeah.
Frankly, even today, that would be the best case scenario. I have a hard time imagining that this happened in small town 21st century America, that this would be a place, that there would be a place for her in that community going forward.
No. No.
You can't live in a town where you ate somebody who lives in the town's kid's leg, even if you didn't mean to. You just can't.
No.
As creatures, we just can't abide that. And I'm sure that went double or triple in 1572.
Probably. And probably a lot of people felt like, gee, you know, if she didn't know something about what he was up to, she sure as hell should have. I mean, really.
I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, there's still a stigma around family members and spouses of people who commit these horrible crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's something they wrestle with.
And, yeah. You can take
it. Even if she was totally innocent of any crime.
Yeah.
She still doesn't have a place there.
Yeah. And, it's just kind of, I would just kind of assume that there was probably some awareness that there was something up, something was not quite right, you know, but go ahead.
Yeah, let's get back to our story. No.
Back to our murders. The third murder, at least officially, was when the locals began to utter the dreaded words, "Loup Garou." Yes. Oh. Yes.
That's a big one. I learned a lot about Loup Garou from my Beast of Gévaudan episodes.
Mm-hmm. I did. Yeah, I love that word, Loup Garou. It's like, wow, that's one scary sounding creature, whatever the hell it is, right?
What, you know what Loup Garou always sounded like to me? It always sounds like a roller coaster ride.
Oh, really? No.
Come on, let's go ride the Loup Garou.
You know, actually, that's a great. Like, you know, if we ever wind up getting rich enough to buy an amusement park, yeah, we are. We will name the roller coaster the Loup Garou. I think
totally.
That,
yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, the local city fathers decreed that all right-thinking citizens should go on the hunt for the lycanthrope, the Loup Garou. And, you know, extinguish whoever was behind this dastardly deed.
Absolutely. And actually, they probably didn't need to even decree that. I bet the citizens were all primed to go out and do it themselves anyway. Time to get the pitchforks and the torches out, right? You know what I'm saying?
I hate to take the side of the pitchfork wielding villagers, but there was no police.
Yeah.
You know, there was no law enforcement to come to your aid. Children are dying. It would be nice to think that they would be rational about it, but even if they were being level-headed people, something's got to be done.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't just sit there and let this happen, right? Like, at some point, you do have to go stop this from happening to someone else's baby.
Oh, absolutely. And and there's actually no evidence that the villagers went out in mobs and just started murdering people indiscriminately or anything like that. I mean, they actually seem to have behaved pretty well.
That's good. Yeah.
You know, but yeah, they were definitely out there looking for their Loup Garou.
You can't blame them, right? Yeah. I mean, it was your kid out there having, God forbid, their legs ripped off.
I know, right?
I mean, just even saying those words as a parent, it taps into something so deep inside you. As we're talking about that animal instinct, right?
Yeah.
The ability to take a life is not very far from, really, probably anyone, but especially a parent, when you start thinking about that kind of violence done to a child.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And people, if there's no legal system, no law and order to protect you, let me tell you, man, I'd grab my pitchfork.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be out there. I hate saying it, but I'd be ready to take that on. And I think that's pretty natural.
Absolutely it is. Yeah. For sure.
So let's talk about what a lycanthrope is. Do you want to tell us about what a lycanthrope really is?
Yeah, a lycanthrope. Well, yeah, again, this is, of course, a human being, just for the few of you who don't know this, but who has an ability to transform into a kind of a cryptid, part man, part wolf. Mm-hmm. And I hinted about this earlier in the legends, most of us are familiar with this ability as a result of a curse inflicted upon somebody, usually through a werewolf's bite, right? But
usually.
But again, in medieval times, lycanthropy was seen as more of a voluntary act, a transformation through sorcery, or maybe just through natural talent.
It is an interesting trend in these lores, right? Like if you think about zombieism, prior to the Second World War, right? Or like the post-war period. Zombieism is something that a maleficent sorcerer does.
Yeah.
Right? Someone with some kind of witchcraft uses some form of that witchcraft to create zombies, which then become a threat to society, to the protagonist of a story, whatever. But then by the 60s, we're talking about zombies as their own thing. It spreads more like a disease.
Yeah.
To this day, if you tried to make a zombie movie and it wasn't, you know, an illness that spread, it wasn't, you know, a disease, they'd probably like laugh you out of the pitch meeting. And I think the same is true of werewolves, right? We think of werewolves as afflicted men who are burdened by this illness that turns them into, you know, werewolves, right? Turns them into this monster. But in all honesty, when things started out, it didn't really work that way. It was due to an act of witchcraft that the lycanthrope performed, or sometimes that someone else did. And I think that's really interesting how that's morphed. And I don't totally understand it, but I think it's worth thinking about the social context
that
we've created these differences in the lore.
Yeah, I think that, you know, definitely from a Hollywood point of view, it's perhaps to give it a little dramatic tension. It's like our hero's been bitten and he's going to become a werewolf, but he doesn't really want to be one. You know, it's like, it makes him a more sympathetic character.
Sure.
Than if he's actually deliberately doing this, you know? I mean, so
in the
maybe,
case of werewolves, I do wonder if this goes back to, so when we talk about lycanthropy, which is why I wanted to bring this up right now at this point in the podcast, Joe.
Yeah.
There are two forms of lycanthropes in the world. And one is the mythological form, and one is a person suffering a disease in which they do not howl at the moon and they are not wolf people, but they grow more hair than normal people.
Yeah.
They have hair follicles that appear over really most of their body, sometimes even on their eyelids.
You can imagine
what that would be like. Yeah, right? It can actually be kind of painful. And across the 19th century, people suffering lycanthropy, which is like, I mean, less than one in 100 million people. I think it's even lower than that. This is extremely, extremely rare. But the people who had survived to adulthood with this disease, which comes with a host of other genetic abnormalities, they often worked as circus freaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can read reports from the Victorian era of people who would, you know, see these people. They didn't really necessarily have an act. They would just come out on stage and be like, look at me, I'm hairy. And people would
what a way to make a living.
and throw things at them and mock them and laugh and scream. Sometimes women would faint. There'd be someone there to hype it up. And a lot of people who went to these shows actually felt sympathy for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wondered if this influence, and I don't have a real answer for this, if this influenced werewolf lore across the 19th century to where people started to treat it more like a disease, and that there might actually be a real human stuck underneath this animal-like facade.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of shifted things. And of course, by the time you get to, you know, like the Lon Chaney movies in the 20s, we've now done a full 360 from seeing them as vile, demon-worshipping sorcerers to people with an affliction.
Mm-hmm. In a sense, maybe Mary Shelley's book, Frankenstein, was kind of a leader in that respect too. Yeah, well, in Shelley's book, and I mean, you've got this creature who's horrible, horrifying, but actually is sympathetic in a way because wasn't something he chose, you know? He didn't choose this.
An immoral scientist chose it for him.
Yeah. But anyway, let's get back to this. I mean, we've all seen this thing in the movie where the guy transforms, you know, it's like it's a full moon, so he falls down and convulses, and suddenly you see, like, you know, his shirt bursts open and you know, all this, and he sprouts hairs everywhere and big, he's kind of like the Incredible Hulk, you know, but with hair, right?
Sure. I mean, that stretches back to the Lon Chaney movie with its meticulous transformation scenes.
Yeah. But so one of the things I've always wondered about is that, like, you know, wouldn't this leave a lot of stretch marks?
Yes. You're dealing with magic, so if the stretch marks heal, I know some werewolf movies have the lore that they're more like snakes, and that they will leave behind like a pile of human skin.
Oh, I see.
And then a pile of like fur and stuff when they change back.
Uh-huh. Really? Okay. Yeah, no, I just wondered what would happen if you're transforming into a big scary wolf, Ben, and back again. What does that do to your epidermis? But it sounds like what you're talking about is that, bam, you just shed it and get a new one.
Just rip out of it. Yeah.
I don't know. That seems like a great way to
I mean, it's all magical. There's no real way to turn a human into a wolf man.
And then back again.
Right, no. Exactly. Like, that's not a real biological process. So
I don't need to worry about stretch marks so much. Okay.
Yeah. I'd probably not stress about those, but yeah, I mean, it is, I think the one thing I would take away from that is that one of the things that is kind of universal is that the process is painful.
Oh yeah, it always is. Yeah. They're always convulsing and screaming and like, ah, you know, and then the process
your
is
bone
complete.
Structure reordered. Never mind the skin and the stretch marks, just having your bones realign themselves would be about as painful a thing as you could ever experience.
Yeah, and suddenly these great big fangs come sprouting out of your skull. That's got to hurt.
Oh, yeah, your joints turning around.
Yeah.
To work the other way. Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
So anyway, the belief in lycanthropy, as I said earlier, went sort of hand in hand with the belief in witchcraft in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So in the town of Dahl, of course, it was time to go on a witch hunt. And as we just talked about, the villagers were organized and out there beating the bushes. They had weapons, whatever were at hand, and they were scouring the countryside looking for this creature. And rather than everybody just deciding that Fred over there is kind of shifty, so it must be him. That's the way it often happened in those
Thank
days.
God they didn't do that.
So there's that. I mean, like I said earlier, as angry torch and pitchfork villagers go, these guys were pretty reasonable about it, I think.
Thank God.
It was a little fairer than the average witch hunt, right? But still, these guys wanted results.
So after some nights of relatively fruitless searching, they had not found the loop guru.
Yeah.
But one night, a group of vigilantes, they stumbled upon a crime scene on the outskirts of town. There was a corpse of a little boy. And there was a strange creature hunched over the body. And that creature turned out to be none other than the Loup Garou. And it was Gilles Gagné.
Yes, it was. Although he wasn't part wolf, he was just a dude.
Yeah, okay. But he looked weird, right? Like he wasn't just hanging out.
Well,
or was he?
I suppose he probably had blood all over him, probably had, you know, a bloody face, you know, right?
I don't know, just the way you wrote that he was hunched over the body. I think the narrative, it stands that he looked suspicious. He wasn't just standing around.
Well, he's hunched over the body. No doubt he told them that he just stumbled upon the boy's body and he was administering CPR. It was all a misunderstanding. But yeah, the villagers were not buying this. They captured him and took him downtown for questioning.
Downtown 16th century, duh.
Yeah. Okay. But again, like this just shows they captured him. They didn't impale him with their pitchforks or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they did show a lot of restraint. And yeah. I mean, think about it. You know, I know some of you out there in the audience, you know, you have kids, you know, people with kids. If you saw a guy that you thought had been eating children in your neighborhood, it'd be really tempting to just run them through with that pitchfork and let them sort it out later. And you'd have to admit you'd be tempted as hell to do that. Good on the people of this little town in France. I think they showed a lot of restraint.
Yeah. Of course, you know, they did take him downtown for questioning, and I'm not sure exactly how vigorous the questioning was. But you do have to kind of assume that there was some torturing involved, right?
Okay. So for context, you're in the south of France, basically just after the time of the Spanish Inquisition. Probably a lot of these practices were still in place.
Well, it the was Inquisition
pretty
was
gnarly what they did to Garnier.
Yeah, the Inquisition actually was all over Europe. The Spanish Inquisition got some special infamy, but in this case, they did not call in the Inquisition. They handled it themselves.
So who are the people doing the questioning, Joe? Do you know?
As far as I know, it was just local authorities doing it.
But was it church authorities or was it?
I assume some church authorities did get involved with it, yeah. But I don't think they...
because, I mean, there wasn't so much a police force.
Yeah, exactly. There wasn't. There was probably a local magistrate and, you know, a local bishop or God knows what. But apparently, though, they didn't make it official and call in the official Inquisition. Because that's what the Inquisition really was. It was the church essentially was it was investigating accusations of things like heresy, but also investigating accusations of things like witchcraft. And the idea there was to kind of actually give it a little bit of due process in these accusations, because people otherwise in these little villages would just accuse somebody of witchcraft and burn them at the stake. So the church would come in and say, well, let's actually try to have a more thorough investigation and really just really find out if these charges are actually justified. And of course, quite often they were found to be, but I think the Inquisition in some cases actually might have saved some people from being burned at the stake.
There was a lot of appeal going on during the Inquisition too, so don't forget that.
Well, the Inquisition also took, there were many Inquisitions, and some of them took on kind of a nastier character than others, like the Spanish Inquisition.
That's true.
Is
right, because the Inquisitor had a lot of power.
Oh, yeah.
And how he conducted his business, and it varied. I got a theory about this, Joe, I want to share with you, and I don't know if this is true or not, but one thing I know is that to have the Inquisition be a part of this, it would have required having an Inquisitor travel to the town.
Yeah.
That could take, in the best cases, weeks.
Yeah.
Because he has a schedule, right? And then he has to then travel. It's not like he could hop on a jet.
Mm-hmm.
So they may have wanted this dealt with a little quicker than the Inquisition could have.
Yeah, absolutely. And so they might not have known who to go to. And of course, whoever it is, you got to send a guy on a horse to travel probably weeks in one direction just to track the guy down and let him know that his services were needed. Now, it could take a long time, like you say, but anyway, that's okay because, they had means to, extract the truth from people at their disposal.
It did.
Absolutely. So it's not surprising Gil Gagné confessed all. He told them the story of the demon and the ointment. He admitted to 4 murders. Presumably under torture. And so you don't know how much of this he made up. We'll talk about this a little more in theory. It's conceivable that he actually didn't kill anybody. And he just confessed because they were torturing the hell out of him. But we'll talk about that a little more. But in his trial, he did testify about he told the story of the demon again, and he said that when he put the ointment on and went loup garou, that he would lose his mind and he'd lost the ability to control himself. He was hungry like the wolf, as the song says, right? Yeah.
That's the Duran Duran track goes.
Yeah, exactly. And so there it is. He confessed that. Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So the court found him guilty of witchcraft and lycanthropy.
Mm-hmm.
Was that like a crime on the books at this time? Do you
lycanthropy?
Know?
It was up there with witchcraft. Yeah, it was a no-no. Okay.
So there was like a statute called lycanthropy, which you could be charged with.
Interesting.
Yeah. Lycanthropy, obviously, because he turned himself into a wolf voluntarily, and witchcraft, because he used magical means to do so.
Yeah, the ointment. Yeah. Well,
makes sense within the legal system of that time.
Yeah.
He was naturally sentenced to death. And on January 18th of 1573, he was burned at the stake.
Ouch.
And we think he was burned alive.
That's
But we don't know what happened to his wife.
Again. Yeah.
Which is so crazy to me.
I think she was probably executed, but she probably was executed in a less harsh manner, but she probably did get the chop, I'm thinking.
It seems like she would be, although I will say that generally speaking, so why I might doubt that a little bit, Joe, France was a very Catholically ordered civilization at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And while the death penalty is looked down upon in Catholicism now, it was embraced at the time, but only through strict measures of sort of papal endorsement, right? You had to do it the Catholic way.
Uh-huh.
So I would say either she was just straight up lynched or I guess maybe they lost the trial records, because a trial would be very important to an execution, right? I mean, so if you went to say, I don't know, like the Old West, sometimes guys got executed and they didn't even bother writing it down. Right.
It just happened.
He was a cattle thief, string him up. And we didn't even really know. Right. But at this time, in this place, there should have been some kind of trial, no matter how much of a sham that trial was. But we don't have any records of it. So I think either those records were lost or she was just hunted down by the villagers.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah, we don't know. So anyway, nothing happened. You know, who knows? I mean, but I don't know what she
lived through, right?
I assume if they didn't string her up, that she probably had a short, unpleasant life anyhow. So, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, she certainly wasn't. There were not a lot of good options for her out there.
But here it is, though, for everybody else, it was a happy ending because Zilupkahu was gone. He was no more. So that's good.
And right. The murder stopped, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit earlier. One fascinating question is still, did they ever actually have a look at that mysterious ointment?
You know, yeah.
Did they make him produce it so they could try to suss out some sort of scientific explanation for its special properties?
Yeah, right.
Or maybe they were afraid to. Maybe they didn't want to. Maybe they didn't even want to look at it, you know, because it was unclean. This is a devil's handiwork, sorcery, and all that stuff. Maybe.
It's
a shame they didn't actually find it and preserve it so we could look at it today and examine it scientifically.
Obviously, that would be really fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And then the other, but alternately, you would think that you would be like, well, let's perform some kind of exorcism on it or destroy it in some kind of way and then make a note, right? Because wouldn't the worst option to be like, well, we killed Garnier. He's done. let's all go get some Chinese takeout and not worry about the thing that made him the loop guru.
That's true. Let's
just leave that on his nightstand. That's like the worst option.
Good point. I mean, what if a possum came in there and got into that stuff and transformed into a human? I mean,
his wife decides she needs to get some of that and take her revenge on whatever, any number of things, or someone doesn't even know what they do. They think it's some kind of, you know, a salve for a burn and then puts it on and turns into a werewolf. Like, it's kind of the worst case scenario to just leave that stuff out there.
No, yeah. I mean, you would think that they would have treated that kind of like a hazmat situation, you know, and they would have, and they would have gone and found it and performed a ritual and burned it all or done something. You know, they're buried.
Maybe those records are lost, or maybe they didn't bother recording it because they wanted to keep it secret.
So I don't know, but that's an interesting question that I do not have the answer to, whatever happened. Or maybe Gil just made up the ointment. Maybe they tortured a confession out of him and made up this story about the demon and the ointment because they wanted to know how he was transformed, et cetera. And so he just made this BS up, but it never even existed. And they just weren't that interested in pressing him too hard on that. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I guess that's about the end of the story, except, of course, we got to talk a little bit about theories.
Want to hear about what you think, because we haven't really talked about this off record. I want to hear what you think was really going on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about that. But before we do that, of course, we've got to hear an ointment commercial from our sponsor. Special ointment that will enhance.
Loop Guru, fresh ointment. The secret to healthy, vivacious, wild skin.
It cures dandruff and it makes you sexier to the... Anyway, so we'll be back in one.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Moment. And we're back. So, time to talk about a few theories regarding this case. And believe it or not, there, because there is a, to me, there are some unanswered questions here.
Some big ones, yeah.
Yeah, there are some big ones. Yeah, exactly what was going on here. It goes from one end to the other. We'll start up with the most outlandish one, which is that he truly was a werewolf. He was a straight up werewolf. He got this magic ointment. But of course that leaves open the question, where did he get it? If this ointment existed, did he get it truly from a demon, or did he maybe possibly just get it from a local witch? It's not inconceivable that, say, if he's having a hard time bagging game and providing food for himself and his wife, that he might go see some local shaman or witch kind of guy and ask for advice and help. And the guy gives him this ointment, which truly does transform him, not necessarily into a wolf, but into a really highly motivated, hungry, completely remorseless creature that was willing to do anything.
Well, it really reminds me of the, not specifically, but just as an example of like the Stanford prison experiment, right? Like, so maybe this bomb wasn't, magic mushrooms or ergot or whatever, but what if it was just some lard in a jar, but it gave him permission to be his worst self?
Yeah. Okay. So it was just a placebo. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Or as I was, I was kind of thinking that it was a mixture of like lard and ergo, which is of course a kind of mold that causes hallucinations and all kinds of weirdness,
and was known in France around this time.
Maybe some lard,
well, not known, but exist. We know was in France.
Yeah, maybe some magic mushrooms in the mix too. Who knows? So it could have been that that he actually scored some real honest to God ointment, but he got it not from a demon, from a human being.
Yeah.
And, or like you said,
I don't know, man. I know a lot of guys who've done a lot of shrooms. None of them ate kids.
No. Yeah, I know. It's so
just want to put that out there.
Oh yeah. No, I'm saying the ergo, maybe, I don't know. But, so I don't know, the ointment, everything else, I'm truly not convinced that it existed. I had a subsidiary theory, which is that he was punked by a mad scientist type who fooled him into believing that he was meeting a demon, and he hands over this magic ointment, which is really just some sort of hallucinogenic chemical. And that combined, as you were saying, the power of suggestion does the rest. Mm-hmm. So that's not remarkably different from what you're talking about.
No.
Yeah, maybe.
That's also what I was going to say, a similar thing, which was that he just made the ointment.
Could have made it himself.
And maybe he did it consciously or unconsciously, but that he was desperate to get some meat in his diet. He was desperate to feed his wife.
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever. And he was like, well, if I put this on, then now it's not me. It's the magic, the demon, the wolf.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't anything,
Yeah.
People trick themselves that way. People convince themselves. And, there's a lot of things that people do. We're talking about Stanford Prison Experiment, but, there's a lot of things that you might be willing to do in a different context than your real life.
Well, this, and this gets just sort of segues into another theory that I have, which is the Wendigo psychosis, or the Central European.
I'm down with this theory.
Yeah. I think it's a Wendigo psychosis. If you remember from our episode about Swift Runner, the Cree Indian who was, taken by the Wendigo and murdered and ate his entire family. Similar kind of thing is that people and Wendigos, the Wendigo psychosis seemed to afflict the Cree Indians in really, really hard times, famine, when the idea of eating your fellow man suddenly became kind of thinkable, because otherwise you're going to starve to death. And so I think that the Wendigo psychosis is kind of like a way of rationalizing your own behavior. It's like, well, it wasn't really me. The Wendigo possessed me
and made me
do these things. It wasn't really me. And it's not, and people can possibly, it seems like people totally convince themselves that I didn't do this. I was possessed by the and similarly, he could have actually convinced himself. Gilles Garnier could have actually convinced himself that that he had actually become a werewolf when really what all he was doing was going out and catching and eating children because he was on the brink of starvation. And, you know, and so,
yeah,
it could have, that's kind of what I'm thinking may have happened here.
I'm gonna be straight with you, Joe. I don't have, like, there's not enough evidence, I think, to make a decision.
Yeah.
But as much as I can endorse one of the theories we're going to talk about, I kind of am with this one.
Yeah.
Like, it has all the right elements, right?
It, he
obviously,
it does. Yeah.
He was on hard times. He was aware of the lore. There's, I think there's a thing about Wendigism, Wendigoism.
Yeah.
That you have, it's a little bit like voodoo, right? Or voodoo. You have to believe in it for it to affect you.
Mm-hmm.
And in this guy's case, just like Swift Runner, he believed in lycanthropy.
Yeah.
He believed there were werewolves and demons and that these things were real.
Yeah.
And could afflict him. And he somehow, through some form of psychosis, ended up there.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you can get into who's really to blame, or, like, you know, you can talk about the mechanics of it, but somehow or another, he found this in himself and gave way to it. And I kind of like that theory. It kind of makes the most sense to me, even if I can't prove it. Right.
Yeah. And perhaps the magic ointment really did somehow exist. But it really didn't have that big, that the effect on him that he believed it did. Again, it was the Wendigo psychosis at work here.
Sure.
But
it was the thing that gave him permission.
Yeah. But
there was another guy I just want to tell you about. I'm sorry, I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was a German. And it's a very similar story from around the same time period.
Are you talking about Peter Stump, I bet you.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
He had a magic belt that turned him into a werewolf.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of similar, right?
Yeah, very similar. It's a, that's a, that's a fascinating story. We'll have to talk about that again one of these days. I don't think.
Yeah, he'd be a fun follow-up episode.
Yeah, yeah. He was also convicted of lycanthropy, and I think they chopped his head off and threw him on the fire and did all kinds of heinous things to him. But
they made sure he was good and dead.
Yeah, but that's, there's an interesting backstory to that too. He might have been innocent, and there were other reasons why people may have wanted to frame him for being frame him for lycanthropy. And because they wanted to get his lands from him, so that's a fascinating.
It's not
tale.
As clear cut a case, but I do think there's a good chance. Well, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I think there's a good chance that Garnier was similarly innocent.
Well, it is possible he didn't do anything. I mean, he could have just been wrong place, wrong time, and he just confessed because they were torturing the hell out of him. You know.
I mean, or maybe he was a little nuts.
Or maybe
think about it, you know, he was already a little crazy, like kind of a hermit in the woods. You know, maybe he already had some form of mental illness, and maybe, you know, I think it's one of the things that we even wrestle with today in our society, right?
Yeah.
If you take me into a room and yell at me that you think I killed a bunch of kids, I'm probably going to fight you to the last.
Yeah.
Right? Now, there are things you can do to wear a person down psychologically that are immoral and bring out false confessions. But if you just yell at me and go, you're a child murderer, I'm going to keep yelling back at you. No, I'm not.
Uh-huh.
Go F yourselves. But there are mentally ill people who will go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be careful if you're in law enforcement that the way that they call it brace or box a guy, that you don't get those false confessions.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to watch out for it, even if you're not torturing, right? See, that's what I'm trying to say is, like, even beyond the concept of torture, that some people are suggestible like that. Mm-hmm. And I bet this was not something that church officials in 1572 were aware of.
Probably not. And so it's between that and the fear of further torture, et cetera, he confessed to this and that was good enough for them. So, you know, it's plausible.
Right.
Yeah. Again, combination of torture, mental illness, who knows how much of either. I want to suggest another possibility too, though, which is that perhaps he did kill a few kids, because it could have been he was a straight up serial killer. He just liked killing, you know, but he didn't actually, mm-hmm. but maybe he wasn't a cannibal. Maybe the body, he just left the bodies and they were actually just chewed on by animals, you know, another possibility too, is that he killed a few kids because he wanted to deter them from coming into his woods. Because imagine that.
Oh, you know, that's a thought, right?
Well, you're having the harshest winter you've ever experienced, you know, game is scarce and you've got these friggin' annoying little kids coming into the woods and picking the berries and picking all the mushrooms and everything else.
Making noise.
And yeah, if making noise and scaring off the game, whatever. So you might think, you know, I'm going to kill a few kids and this will scare the crap out of everybody and they'll just stay out of the woods and leave.
Oh, yeah. You know, I got some stern talking to and a lot of dirty looks when I was a kid going up in hunting areas from hunters who didn't want me there, not because I was going to hunt their game. Obviously, I wasn't. I was a little kid. I didn't even have a weapon on me.
Yeah.
But obviously, if I'm running around there yelling, the deer and the elk and whatever else are not going to want to be around.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to scare the game away. And also, of course, if you're out there, they could accidentally shoot you, and they probably didn't want to do that either. But yeah.
Absolutely. And I have gotten talking to is from people. Or worse yet, I actually had a bunch of buckshot fall down the back of my shirt when I went into Salvia Island during duck hunting season.
Oh, yeah. I tell people that happened to you out there, too. Yeah, you can actually catch a little rain.
Yeah,
a little
shot hail. Just drop out of the air and be like, what's this? Oh, my God, I'm being shot at. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've had that happen.
Ah, yeah. But
not smart.
Yeah, so it's possible he did something like that. But again, he never actually was a werewolf, never believed himself to be a werewolf at all. But he fessed to that just because. And he probably figured by this time that since he had been caught with the dead body of one little child, he was done for one way or the other. So what the hell? I'll just tell them whatever they want to hear, you know.
And he saw that as some form of redemption or something. You know what I mean? That he could say, well, look, man, I fell to the devil. I put this ointment on me, and it's not really me. I was weak. I was induced by a demon. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a little better than saying like, yeah, actually I like killing and eating kids.
Yeah, exactly. It shifts some of the responsibility, onto something or somebody else. So that could have been it. A fascinating story. But was he truly a werewolf? I kind of doubt it. My best theory here is Wendigo psychosis, whatever the
I feel like this is European, exactly, yeah. European Wendigo psychosis.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
I really buy that in this case.
Yeah. So anyway, there it is, another mystery solved, I guess. Yeah. So all you people are thinking...
Another mystery chalked up to the Wendigo.
I know, exactly. The friggin' Wendigo, man. Stay away from that dude.
Watch out for that guy. Bad news.
The Wendigo is actually quite scary. I'm actually glad I don't believe in him, so I'm impervious. But otherwise, man.
Yeah.
Terrifying creature.
That's it. Well, okay, the thing is, if you don't believe in him, you may not turn into the Wendigo. That won't stop the Wendigo from eating you, though. That's where it's really frightening.
Yeah, well, that's why I stay out of that particular set of woods where he hangs out. But yeah.
I don't know, man. There could be an Oregon Wendigo.
Yeah, well, there's nothing, there's no rule that says a Wendigo can't move around. I mean, mm-hmm. So he might not be here now, but he might be here tomorrow.
Well, we studied Alfred Packer. There's no Wendigo lore in Colorado, but that guy kind of acted like a Wendigo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Wendigo, he's everywhere. Yeah.
He's everywhere. He's even in 16th century Europe, so watch out for the Wendigo.
Yeah, one of these days he'll even have a website and a Patreon.
The Wendigo podcast. Hey everybody, this is the Wendigo. Yeah, yeah. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, that's right. If you pledge to my Patreon, I won't possess you or kill you. But I guess that's about
support it. Support me on Patreon or I'll eat this child.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. And I'd be sending a message like, hey, screw you. Go ahead, eat the kid. I don't, you know. But yeah.
Right. How many people would be like, I'm pledging on your Patreon because I think you're awesome, but please eat the kid. Sick people out there. And I know some of you are listening. We got some, never mind. Our listeners are great.
No, our listeners are cut above. There's no doubt about that. But
they really are. They're not those kind of psychos.
No, not at all. But anyway, I don't know. I mean, I'm all out of thoughts on this particular story myself. Got any more or should we just wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up. Okay. We've gone on for a while about this guy. Although I will say this was as I said at the beginning, I'm a werewolf super fan, and I'm going to be straight with you, Joe. I found this much more fascinating than I thought I would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a cool story.
It is a cool story. Yeah. And, hey, so it must have been interesting times back in medieval Europe, back when werewolves were prowling the forest. I mean,
yeah. Interesting as in terms of like your kid's leg being ripped off.
Yeah. Well, whether it was a werewolf or something else, it would have been dark and scary times back in those days.
Would have been bad news. Oh, yeah. You wouldn't have liked to live there.
Oh yeah.
As much as things suck these days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot. You wouldn't want to go back to the 15th century or with the 16th century.
I don't think so. No. Yeah. I'm not nostalgic.
You wouldn't trade it.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I guess the usual stuff here. Stay tuned to hear the lovely Tess tell you how to find us on social media and also via email. Yes, email.
That's true.
That stuff. Yeah. And of course, we're going to beg you for a really nice rating and a nice review. Wherever you might happen to get this podcast from, because, you know, we like that. It makes us feel better. It pumps up our ego, and it also helps us, helps us get more attention and find new listeners too, which we always want.
You know? We do. Yeah. Well, and it also helps us to keep doing what we're doing and do better research and bring you better stories have a bigger community for you to talk about and discuss these stories with. So yeah, give us a rating and review. It really helps.
Damn it. Do it now. All right.
Well, let's close it out for the week.
All right. Ta-ta, everybody.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.